Lecture 18, Martin Buber's Religious Existentialism.
Leo Beck had begun the assault on Hermann Cohn and on the German idealistic tradition. Martin Buber is going to take us much, much farther. And in many respects, Buber really shatters completely the dominance of the Cohn view of Jewish thought and opens up a whole new way of addressing the Jewish tradition. Perhaps the best way of starting with Martin Buber is to tell stories, because indeed, as you will see, in creating a kind of existential moment, Buber does tell a lot of stories. He even recreates traditional Jewish stories, Hasidic stories, but clearly even stories about his own life. Let me mention two episodes which Buber himself records. The first is in scribbling the lines of the very famous 17th century French philosopher Pascal, who wrote, "God of Abraham, God of Isaac, God of Jacob, not of the philosophers and scholars." Notice that opposition. The God of the philosophers, obviously, in Buber's mind, is the philosophy of Hermann Cohn. The God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob is that authentic God, that living, absolute presence, which this individual, that is Buber, wants to capture for the hearts and souls of Jewish people and non-Jewish people as well. Buber uses the phrase to explain the historical moment through which the world was passing, which he calls, and it is the title of one of his books, The Eclipse of Heaven, The Eclipse of God. For him, the absolute, because of philosophers like Hermann Cohn, the absolute is dead. In a century, because in the century that we now live in, the 20th century, for Buber, because philosophers and their devices of the intellect have divested God of his mystery. They have made God into an idea, and thus the sense of the presence of God is no longer there. God was no longer a personality to speak to, but simply and solely an idea. And thus the immediate God of Abraham, of Isaac, of Jacob, has vanished. So the first story, or it's not really a story, the first lines of Buber that I record to you are therefore his reaction to that line in Pascal. Here is actually a story. And this is a very, very famous exchange. Buber goes off to lecture at a site in Germany, and his audience are basically German workers. And Buber is going to speak about the existence of God and the meaning of God in one's life. Having given a very theological talk, he sits down. A worker gets up to ask a question. And the worker says, "You know, Professor, this is all very nice. You have nice words. But you really haven't conveyed to me any sense of what God means in my own life. God doesn't mean anything to me. And therefore, I'm completely turned off by what you had to say." What had essentially begun as a kind of intellectual interaction now became a crisis for Buber in needing to respond adequately to this worker. So, of course, he tries to shatter his intellectual argument by presenting all kinds of reasons why there is a God in the world and so on. The worker was overwhelmed with his words and sits down and says, "I guess you must be right." But Buber characteristically rebukes himself for having proven the merit of what he calls, again, the God of the philosophers, but not what Pascal had called the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, him to whom one calls thou. And that word, as you will see, is very, very critical here. He had won the argument, but he had never converted the worker. He had proven the idea, but he had not evoked the real presence of God. Perhaps what he should have done is to take that worker by the hand, to lead him out to walk in the woods or in nature or in a beautiful spot, and thereby to create also a personal relationship with him. By that living relationship between two human beings, perhaps God, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, would have been seen in an entirely different way.